Welcome to the Ripple Revolution Podcast. In this podcast, we take a new look at how we think about making a difference with an approach that integrates living an energized life and making the world a better place. My guest today is Brian Johnson. Brian is the philosopher and CEO of Entheos, a company aimed at helping people optimize their lives. He's the co-founder of the Entheos Academy, Philosopher's Notes and Blissitations, and is the author of the book A Philosopher's Notes. He's also featured in the documentary Finding Joe and has a monthly Big Ideas column in Experience Life magazine. Hello, Brian. First, I want to say that I am so completely amped to have an interview with you as the maiden voyage here for the Ripple Revolution podcast. I can't think of many more people who would be better for it, because you really have a foot in each of the camps of the questions that we're going to be looking at over the course of this series. One of those is, how do I live a fully energized life? And then the other one is, how do I make a difference in the world? So let's start off just with what you're up to now. Could you tell us a little bit about Entheos?
Yeah, well, first, thanks for having me. I'm thrilled and honored to be the first in this series, and really excited to chat today and to listen to all the great stuff you come up with. So thank you for that. And Entheos is the business that my wife and I started when we got married almost exactly 3 years ago now. And Entheos are two little Greek words, En plus Theos, that mean God within. And the Greeks said that that's the root of enthusiasm. So the word enthusiasm comes from those two little Greek words, En plus Theos. And this is really what our lives are all about, is how do we plug into that highest within ourselves more and more consistently and shine with a radiant enthusiasm that we think is only discovered when you're in integrity with the fundamentals of optimal living and you're really living your deepest truths. And then how do we inspire and empower people around the world to do the same, to really plug into the highest versions of themselves and make a difference in their families and communities and world. So that's kind of a high level, and we do a number of things we can talk about, but I'll pause there. That's the basic idea behind Entheos.
Yeah, it's fabulous. Well, a lot of different directions I want to take that. That's the problem with an interview with you, is there's so many things that I want to talk about. So let's see if we can take one at a time. So why don't you tell me a little bit about Entheos Academy?
Yeah, so the idea with the Entheos Academy, I was having breakfast with a favorite author of mine who's become a friend, Stephen Pressfield, who wrote The War of Art, which, if you haven't read it, or people listening haven't read that book, I highly recommend it. It's a book on moving through fear and resistance in the creative process. And we were having breakfast, and he asked me, we were talking about classic Greek virtue and stuff like that, and he asked me if I ever considered creating a modern-day Plato's Academy. And it was one of those kind of choir of angels moments of, that's a really, really cool idea. And we talked about what that would look like and, you know, bringing great teachers to teach in a virtual academy. And it was one of the ideas I just kind of jumped on and ran with. And we wound up producing over 100 classes in our first year and worked with some extraordinary teachers. And the basic idea is, you know, we tend to go, most schools go from science to math to history, but for some weird reason, they miss the class on how to live. But what if we could create not only that class, but an actual academy on optimal living, where people can learn the basics of how to create more happiness and meaning and mojo in their lives, and do so around everything from nutrition and fitness and exercise and all that stuff to relationships and parenting and creativity and business and all the things that we think go into creating an extraordinary life in the 21st century.
Nice, excellent. So one of the things that I love about the I've watched your path unfold for many years now, and one of the things that I love about what you have done over the course of these years is this idea of giving yourself a PhD in optimal living. So could you tell me a little bit about, A, what the heck that is, and B, how you came to that idea?
Yeah, it was actually in the works for the better part of 15 years. When I was an undergraduate at UCLA, I studied psychology, and At the time, I considered getting my PhD in psychology, but this was in the early, mid-90s, and they weren't doing anything really on the positive side of psychology. That really started closer to 2000. And so I didn't wind up getting my PhD then, but it was always a kind of dream of mine to study how to, I didn't use these words, but how to optimize our lives. And leadership was kind of a theme of that. But I've always been fascinated by what makes great people great. What is it about that 0.001% who really go out and make a difference in the world? And so as I started my career and did various things, I always had in the back of my mind going back to school. And I had thought about psychology when the positive psychology movement really got going, philosophy, religious studies, getting my master's in business. I'd thought about all these things, but there really wasn't a program that integrated all the stuff I wanted to study, which included all those things, but also more of the practical side of old school philosophy and mysticism and the modern day, self-development literature with creativity and nutrition and all those things. So after selling my second business about 6 years ago now, I think, I decided to give myself my own PhD and integrated all the stuff I just described into my own program. And I figured I'd get a master's when I had distilled 100 of my favorite optimal living books into fun little summaries called Philosopher's Notes, and spent 2 years doing that, and then spent another couple years basically teaching a class called Optimal Living 101 and writing a book that was kind of my dissertation summarizing all my favorite big ideas and hopefully providing people with a glimpse into what I think are some of the key fundamentals of optimizing our lives.
Excellent.
And gave myself a PhD in the process.
Perfect. Which is a good lead into the next question on the optimal living living idea that I had, which is, okay, here's this thing that you did. Now making it applicable to what other people are doing in their lives. What did you glean from that? What would you share from doing the experience, and then also the what would you share as to what's most important for people to know, to incorporate, to learn, et cetera, as they move towards optimal living?
Yeah, well, in the process of reading all these books and read hundreds of different books, I basically identified 10 principles that I thought the great teachers came back to again and again and again. And starts with optimism. All the great teachers tell us that we need to get our minds right. If we can't put our attention where we want, when we want, then we're going to have a really hard time living an optimal and happy life, a meaningful life. And then it continues into purpose. The great teachers tell us we all have a purpose. What is it that we're here to do? How do we live that? And that requires self-awareness, which is the third principle. And then I bring it into more of the practical of goals. Scientists tell us happy people have projects, they have goals. And then principle number 5 is action. Well, that's nice, but if you don't take consistent action, then none of this stuff really matters. So that's number 5. And then number 6 is energy, actually optimizing our health and well-being. And I like to say if you have a hard time getting out of bed, you're going to have a hard time living at your highest potential. And then wisdom, all the teachers come back to the idea that life is our classroom, that every moment is an opportunity to learn and to grow. So I talk about that a lot. And then courage comes from the same Latin word as heart. So just as your heart pumps blood to your arms and legs and vital organs, courage is the virtue that vitalizes all the other virtues. All the great traditions and teachers talk about that. And then love, of course. None of that stuff matters if we don't have love. And that starts with ourselves and kind of emanates out. And then this idea of entheos, of connecting to something bigger than ourselves. So I love framing a lot of my work around those 10 principles, but then what I'm most passionate about is the fundamentals. So focusing on the day in and day out simple fundamentals that we can do that actually help us stay plugged in, and then specifically the Greek idea of virtue, of arete. The Greeks said that if you want happiness, and all of my work can be summarized into this one word, arete, which the Greeks said is the key to flourishing, which is essentially, it's translated as excellence or virtue, arete is, but it means something closer to essentially expressing the highest version of yourself moment to moment to moment. So when you do that, when we show up and we do what we're capable of doing more and more consistently, that's when we experience happiness. When we don't, then there's a gap between what we're capable of being and what we're actually being. That's where regret and anxiety and disillusionment comes in. So how do we close that gap more and more consistently? We're never going to be perfect, but how do we step forward into growth and live at our highest more and more consistently? And that's kind of the main through line of all of my work.
So then these 10 principles is part of what the answer to that is. The answer to how do you step forward and live that?
Yeah. Yeah, the way that I describe it is, okay, if I had to summarize all of my work in one word, it's art.
Mm-hmm.
And then, okay, that's nice, but let's give it a little more detail. And here are 10 principles, and then each of those 10 principles obviously have a lot of theory and very practical applications of those ideas, and that's mm-hmm. kind of how I unpack the wisdom that I've studied and strive to integrate into my life.
I love it. And so as I'm listening to this, with the Ripple Revolution and the ideas behind that, is really taking a look at this idea of the fact that the personal development we do and the work that we do on our own lives isn't actually at the opposite end of the spectrum from the difference that we make in the world. It's actually at the heart of it. And when you do the work on your own life, it creates the foundation and the focus and the fuel for the work that you can do out in the world. And what I see in these things that you're talking about is really another way of talking about that.
I completely agree. It's the idea of being the change. And for me, there's that, the way that I do live an energized life is by striving to make a difference. And the way that I make a difference is by being energized. And it's this beautiful, harmonious cycle that feeds each other. And that's it, is for us, is plugging into that highest version of ourselves. And how do we do that more and more consistently? And as we do that, and only when we do that, can we really most fully give ourselves to the world. And a lot of times we kind of skip into all the busyness of life, and we forget the very things that actually allow us to really give our gifts, the exercise, the nutrition, the meditation, the time for contemplation, et cetera.
Absolutely. So, and I think that's a really important point that gets skipped over way too often, is the impact that this personal stuff has both on our own lives and the world around us. So, could you talk about just your own perspective on the importance of that and the impact that that has on people and what they're able to do in the world?
So can you reframe that for me? Tell me.
Yeah, absolutely. The internal work and the work that we do with our own lives, so whether it's personal development, whether it's the health piece, et cetera, what's the importance of that, and then what impact does that have both on our own individual lives and then also what we're able to do and create, et cetera, out in the world?
Fantastic. Got it. So the interesting thing is scientists tell us that positive psychologists and people who study happiness tell us that happiness precedes success. So happier people are more successful. They're healthier, they're wealthier, they're more successful in every regard. And what's very interesting is they're actually also more other-centered. So happy people are more other-centered and less self-centered. So a lot of people think that committing ourselves to our own happiness and to plugging into the highest version of ourselves and to optimizing our lives is an inherently selfish act. And the science says, well, it's actually one of the most unselfish things you can do in the bigger sense, because it's only from that place of true health and vibrancy and fulfillment and meaning and flourishing that we can most powerfully give ourselves the world, and that we actually get out of our self-centered approach. It's unhappy people who are constantly thinking about themselves and their own worries, and it's the truly flourishing, I want to see what I can do to give myself to the world, people that are actually able to focus on others. So I think that one of the challenges I see in my life, and that I think we all experience, is we prioritize everything but ourselves. So we've got these important meetings on our calendars, but for whatever reason, our meditation practice and sitting for 12 to 15 minutes a day, which science unequivocally says is one of the most powerful things we can do, our exercise and all these other things that we know are important for us that we really want to get to are always left to the end of the day, and they don't make the schedule. And I like to reframe that and act as if that was the most important meeting of the week. If you were going to meet your hero tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. or 7 a.m., you would never miss that meeting. So how do we reframe our fundamentals and our basic practices in the same light and commit to ourselves the same way we would things that are otherwise really important to us?
Yeah. So as you're saying that, I just got this big smile on my face because I love this idea of making yourself the hero of your own life story. Because, I mean, really, if you think about it, at best, most of us are indifferent, and quite often we're the villain.
Yep.
And so then just this idea, if you were going to meet the hero, if you were going to meet your hero the next morning, you would do everything it takes. And really, we have this infinite potential to be the hero of our own life story. And so part of it is really changing the way that we step up and engage with ourselves.
Absolutely.
To acknowledge that and recognize that.
Yeah, and then redefining that as an essential part of the ultimately unselfish action. I mean, a lot of times we get kind of mixed up in that. And Campbell talks about this a lot in his Hero's Journey, that a work that vital people vitalize those around them. And it's inherently not a selfish act. And obviously we want to stay committed to engaging these practices and finding ways to be more in service to the world, et cetera. But yeah, it's so easy to ignore it. And this is what it's all about for me, is to identify those fundamentals, the things that we do when we're really feeling alive, and to make them consistent, non-negotiable practices in our lives. And as a guy who's been very up and very down over the course of my life, it's like scaffolding. You can't fall that far down when you're exercising consistently, meaning 5-6 days a week. You're eating well, no refined foods, lots of whole foods, or less refined foods, lots of whole foods. And you're training your mind via meditation, gratitude. And it's difficult to fall as low as you can when you let those very basic fundamentals slip.
Excellent, excellent. You know, with that, I think that when people think about what do I need to bring into my life, exercise, everybody knows. Eating right, everybody knows, right? So these are things that have been kind of hammered into us, whether we do it or not, they've been hammered into us. I think what doesn't get so much attention is that piece that you said about training the mind. So let's talk a little bit about that, because I think that's a really important piece that has a lot to do with how we're able to show up in the world and the potential that we have both to live an energized life and to maximize the impact that we can make out there. So what does that mean? And then B, what kinds of suggestions do you have on that?
Yeah, great stuff. So want to start with the idea there's kind of the mind-body and there's body-mind, and that it's really easy to jump over the nutrition and the exercise. But this is the whole point of the work, is to move from theory to practice, where we don't just jump over it, we actually do it. And exercise is a magic pill. I mean, this is how researchers describe it. To not exercise is like taking a depressant. To not exercise is like taking a depressant, Tal Ben-Shahar said. So it's an amazing thing how easy it is to skip over. So getting those into our lives is huge. And it's not complicated. We don't need to pick up the latest fad, anything. We just need to show up and do the most basic stuff, exercise, nutrition-wise. And then meditation-wise, I frame it in the idea of attention training. So when I was interviewing Sonia Lubomirsky a couple months ago, and she's one of the leading positive psychologists, and I asked her, I forget what the frame of the question was, but basic idea is, what's the number one thing that you can do to optimize your life? And her answer was, train your attention. That attention is the greatest predictor of your well-being. And if you don't have good control over the contents of your consciousness, meaning you can't put your mind where you want, when you want, then all this other stuff doesn't really matter that much, because we're constantly going to be thrown from here to there. And so how do we train that? Meditation is the most significant, powerful way to do it. And again, it doesn't need to be weird and woo-woo. It's very, very simple, sit down and follow your breath or any other anchor, whether it's a mantra or counting down or counting up. And basically, it's like going to the gym for your mind. If you want to be able to run a marathon or do a triathlon or lift a certain amount of weights, you go to the gym and you lift those weights. Well, if you want to be able to optimize your life and train your attention, you need to go to the equivalent mental gym. And so meditation is a big part of my life and teaching. But then it's not just meditation. It's every moment gives you an opportunity to choose what I call the most empowered response. So when someone cuts you off on the freeway heading to work, you have a choice. You can either respond one way or your habitual way or the most empowered way. And every single moment gives us an opportunity to do that. We're standing in a line at the grocery store and it's taking forever. Well, that's one approach. Or you can realize you're in a grocery store with tens of thousands of items that you get to just cruise through and throw into your shopping cart. Like take advantage of that time in traffic and you're complaining about being in traffic and realize that 100 years ago you would have been on a horse. Like there are so many opportunities to train our attention. So meditation is one. Moment-to-moment empowerment response is another. And then gratitude is another one of the scientifically most robust ways to boost our well-being, just appreciating what's working in our lives rather than constantly thinking about what's not. So those are the three basic things I look at in attention training: meditation, and choosing an empowered response, and gratitude.
I love it. And none of those are rocket science. And I agree with you just 110% on the impact of those. I have really focused on incorporating all of those into my life, and to the degree that I am successful, because it comes and goes and ebbs and flows, and to the degree that I'm successful at it, it's mind-boggling the impact that it has.
Yeah, and then it's consistency on the fundamentals. That's it. Can we consistently practice the mundane? I mean, that's where the David Allen, getting things done guy, says that the magic comes through the mundane, that the sublime comes through the mundane. You've got to master these very, very basic things. This isn't rocket science. This is incredibly straightforward. You know, the question is, can we consistently live with arte, with that virtue, that impeccability, integrity to what we know to be best for us? Do we actually do it? And that's the fun creative challenge, is to take common sense and make it common practice, right?
Absolutely. So I knew this would happen. We are reaching the end of the half hour conversation, and I have 10 million more things that I want to talk about. But I'm going to wrap up now, and two things. First, is there anything else you would, in wrapping up, like to share with people that would help them show up in their own lives as Ripple revolutionaries and doing this internal work and energizing their life and making a difference out there in the world? And then second, would love to get the URL where people can find out more about you and Entheos and what's going on there.
Perfect. I'll start with a second. I'm easiest way to learn more about me is brianjohnson.me, brianjohnson.me. And there's links to all the different things we have going on. And then practically speaking, I would say, what's the number one thing? I love to focus on the number one practical things that I can do to improve my life. And we don't want to do the should. We don't want to focus on, I should do this, I should do that. We want to focus on what we feel really inspired to do. So I would challenge everyone, and I do this with myself all the time, what's the number one thing that you could start doing, that if you started doing it consistently, would have the most positive impact in life? Kind of 100% non-negotiable. I am going to engage in this behavior, create this habit, or recreate this habit if it slips and I used to have it or whatever. That's going to have the biggest impact in my life. And what's the number one thing that you need to stop doing? The behavior that's just not serving you. And we all have our various little addictions, and they go from whatever on the spectrum. But what's the number one thing that you're going to decide to stop doing that you know just isn't serving you? So those number one things, the positive and the negative, are the kind of compass I come back to. Anytime I'm feeling a little bit off or I just want to kind of dial it up, I reflect on that. And for me right now, it's I've been working really hard. When I work, I tend to get on email a lot. I tend to check email on my iPhone. And it's great for a while, but then it just becomes too much. So that's my number one stopping, is I'm no longer going to check email on my iPhone for, I don't know how long, but for the foreseeable future. It doesn't need to be forever, but till I get recalibrated and get more spaciousness back into my mind. What's the number one positive? I'm pretty good on the positives. Got my rowing going on. Exercise is my consistent thing. I got that going on. But figure out what your number one thing you're going to start doing, number one thing you're going to stop doing. That's what I would say.
Excellent. Perfect. I love it. As always, I am coming away from a conversation with you feeling completely inspired and amped up and ready to go out there and do my thing. So thank you so much for your time and your insights and just a fun conversation.
And thank you, Kurt.
Absolutely. So with that, we are wrapping up the maiden voyage of the Ripple Revolution podcast. If you would like to know more about the Ripple Revolution, you can go to www.ripplerevolution.com.